Thank you for listening to Board Game Bros. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We are brothers in real life, and we are board game designers in real life.
So that makes us the Board Game Brothers.
Indeed. And in this podcast, we talk about board game design. We talk about other types of tabletop gaming, card games, role-playing games, but mostly board games. And we are currently in the middle of our series on Gateway Games. So Matthew,
what is a gateway game?
Well, I was just about to ask you the same question. I was hoping you could elaborate. What is a gateway game? What makes a game a gateway game?
Now, from my understanding, a gateway game is a game that is easy for newcomers to the hobby to learn, yet has enough depth to keep every player occupied. It almost acts as a gateway into the realm of board gaming as a hobby.
Okay, well, yeah. Much like a gateway drug is a gateway into other drugs, a gateway game is a gateway into other games.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we are talking about the mother of all gateway games. I'd say Catan is the father and this game here is the mother.
That's a fair assessment.
So, and this game, of course, is Ticket to Ride. We normally don't synchronize that, but I think I like it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it from now on.
All right.
Yeah, we're talking about Ticket to Ride. It's the game of tickets and train rides.
You don't really ride the trains. You just build the train tracks.
Sure, whatever. Anyways, so could you give us a little history on Ticket to Ride?
Just give me one second here. Ticket to Ride was designed by Alan R. Moon and published in 2004 by Days of Wonder. It is another Spiel des Jahres winner, the prestigious German Game of the Year award, and it also won Origins Best Game of the Year for 2004, and it won several other awards.
Mm-hmm. This is a critically acclaimed board game.
And for good reason, too.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people out there are probably thinking to themselves, how do you play Ticket to Ride?
Maybe not a whole lot of people. The game's pretty popular.
Yeah, the game's pretty popular. Most of you probably know how to play Ticket to Ride. But for those of you who don't, it's a very simple game. The goal of the game is to get the most points. You earn points in two ways. The first way is just making connections between two cities on the map of North America and Canada by just laying down some tracks and making a connection for yourself. The other way to earn points is there are tickets. And each ticket has two cities that are relatively far apart. The further they are, the more points a ticket will give you. But you earn those points at the end of the game by making one continuous track connection from one city to the other. By the end of the game.
Note that if you do not complete that connection between those two cities, you will lose that many points.
Mm-hmm. So it's important that you complete your ticket connections. Now you start the game you are given three tickets, and you have the choice of keeping either two or three of those tickets. And then as the game progresses, you have the option of gaining more tickets. But again, the more tickets, they give you more points than just a normal connection for the most part, but they are they're inherently risky.
Now, how do you connect these
cities? So the way that you connect two cities is you need to collect cards in your hand. There are cards with train cars on them in eight different colors, as well as a wild card that counts as all of the eight different colors. Those colors are black, white, pink, red, yellow, orange, blue, and
green.
Yes, those are the eight colors. And you have to collect matching sets. On the board, you'll see that between each city, there is a line of rectangles. And however many rectangles there are and whatever color they're in, that's exactly how many cards and the color of cards that you have to collect in your hand. And then on your turn, you discard that number of cards in that suit in order to create that track. And when you do that, you get to take your plastic pieces and line them up on the board covering that track. And then you get points.
Note that you can only do one action per turn.
Okay, well hold on, we'll get to that. But I also wanted to say there's some tracks that you can place any color, or you can use any color cards to fulfill. They're gray. And most cities are only connected by one track line, which means that it's the first player, only one player can claim that track. Some cities that have maybe more popular connections have two rows side by side, so two different players can gain that connection. But once a connection has been captured, covered by a character with his plastic pieces, it can't be taken for the rest of the game.
Right. Now, you also can only do one thing per turn, which can be either drawing new tickets, drawing new train cards to play into tracks, or playing cards onto tracks.
Mm-hmm. And that's all there is to it, to playing the game.
It's pretty basic.
Yeah, it's very basic. And that's really one of the biggest reasons why this is a gateway game. In its simplicity, in that a turn is not complicated. On your turn, right. You have three different things you can do, and it's very clear which one you need to do at any given moment, except for maybe when you should be drawing tickets.
Right.
But generally, you know, you think, okay, can I finish any tracks that I need to finish? And if the answer is no, then you look over at the pile of cards that you have to draw from to get new train cars, and you see if there's any colors you need. So drawing train cars, this game uses a mechanic, that's very popular in a lot of deck building games, and that is a trade row.
Yes.
Now a trade row is a way of making it so that you're not just drawing the top card of a deck. It smooths out the draws, in a way by revealing five cards at a time. And every time one of those cards is taken, you replace it with the top card of the deck. So instead of drawing from the top card of the deck, you're drawing from the top five cards of the deck, essentially.
However, you can still draw from the top of the deck in case nothing in the trade row appeases you.
Mm-hmm.
This is also important because if a wild card is in the trade row and you were to draw that, you can't draw another card. When if you were to draw the top card of the deck and it's a wild card, you can draw your second card for that turn.
Yeah, so just to re-explain, or just to explain this in a little better detail, when you draw train cars, you have the option of drawing up to two cards. You have the choice of either drawing from the five face-up cards in the trade row, or you can draw the top card of the deck if those five cards don't really suit what you're looking for. But if one of the cards that you draw from the face-up cards is a wild card, you can't draw any more cards. So that means, if you draw something else, then you cannot draw a wild card as your second draw. If you draw two, they have to either be two face-up cards of a specific color, or they have to be from the top of the deck. Since the top of the deck is hidden information, and only you know what you drew from there, then even if you draw a wild card, you can still draw another one. The game allows that.
Right.
Now, if you want more tickets, similarly to the beginning of the game, you get to look at three ticket cards. There's a deck of cards with all the tickets in them. And you have to choose to pick one, but you have the option of picking all three.
Or two.
Or two. You can pick as many as you want at a minimum of just one. Yeah, so those are the two... The actions explained in detail, and of course the third we explained earlier, you play cards from your hand. So with just those three basic actions, you play and then you finish the game. Once somebody has played all but three of their own little plastic pieces, or if they have around between three and zero pieces left over at the end of their turn, that's when the game ends.
Well, all the players get an extra turn, except for that player. Well, then when it gets back to that player, then.
Yeah, okay.
But anyways. Another important thing about it being a good gateway game that you somewhat touched on is I feel like many good gateway games have quick explanation times. I know that if you have to take a little longer than a few minutes to explain a game to somebody who doesn't usually play board games,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people tend to tune out.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think a lot of the good gateway games have quick explanations that get the point across really quickly and then allow you to jump right into the game.
And this is something that Ticket to Ride has up over Catan. Yes. Because I remember seeing a College Humor video a couple years ago that was, it was, hey, let's play this cool new game. It's called Catan. Okay, how do you play it? And then the video was about 5 minutes long, mm-hmm. and it had, you know, this guy just rambling out on the rules and going on and on, and the people he was explaining to becoming increasingly confused.
Right.
If that same guy were to try and explain how to play Ticket to Ride, you know, I'm sure it would have gone a lot quicker, because it's pretty simple. It's just earn points. You earn points by laying tracks between cities and connecting cities across the board with tickets. And you do that by drawing and playing. I mean, playing.
We don't need to explain the whole game again.
I'm just saying. Either way. That's it. But I explained it in 5 seconds.
Exactly. So, now, another thing about time, the turns are quick, which there's very little downtime between your turn and your next turn.
Mm-hmm.
You can even overlap turns. I know when we played, when one person starts to look at the 3 tickets on the top of the deck to try to draw tickets, we let the next person take their turn, because it usually doesn't affect which tickets you draw.
Yeah, generally turns go fast unless somebody is looking at tickets. And like you said, you could just allow other players to overlap. However, I realize that you don't really want to. You're affording that ticket player some extra information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you complete a track that separates 2 cities on a ticket that another player is thinking about obtaining, you know, that rules out tickets for them. So they won't be taking risks. Now, and most of this game's strategy and tension comes from taking risks.
I have to agree on this. Now, this might sound a little hypocritical given what I was saying during the Dominion episode and the Catan episode, but I like drawing from the top of the deck and Ticket to Ride. Mm-hmm. I feel like normally I don't like the unmitigated luck and risk involved, but since I know what I don't want in the 5 cards in the trade row, there's a bit more tension and a bit more just excitement when drawing from the top of the deck, because it could be exactly what I need.
Well, I mean, there is tension when drawing cards, but even more tension for me during the gameplay was from just sitting there quietly for everyone else's turns and probably just staring daggers at one specific connection mm-hmm. that I knew I had to make, or else my whole plan would be thrown off the rails. But it was really tense just thinking like, oh man, and watching everybody else's tracks just start to slowly expand across towards where you're gunning for, you know. It's important for you to make those tickets since they're worth points against you, and when mm-hmm. you're just sitting there and you're anticipating the cards to show up and you're hoping that you can finish this one section before anybody else can steal it from you, that's a very important part of the game.
Right.
And I don't know. I felt that more than I felt that in many other similar games.
Which, speaking of which, brings me to another point I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of gateway games are precursors to more complex games in the board gaming sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket to Ride is a great gateway game to introduce people into area control games.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of a game where you have like a map or a grid or something like that.
And that town ain't big enough for the 2 to 4 of you.
Or more. Yeah, where your points tend to come from how much area you have or some combination of that. Or you just gain resources from an area and you don't want other people to get your area.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be the first person to get there, and you want to hold it to the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
This game very clearly illustrates that.
It gets players thinking spatially, not only by taking things before everybody else, but looking at the map and planning out routes and thinking ahead about what players might be trying to build. I know there was a time when we played where you were going for a specific lengthy track to build, and I knew you were going to make it because you had 2 stranded lines of train
mm-hmm.
that you needed to connect.
Yeah, I remember during that game that I knew I had the 2 lines on other sides of the board, and eventually, you know, there was a point where it was a little bit ambiguous where they could go, but you know, once there's just one section of track left for you to complete, everybody knows what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
I remember there was one part where on the very corner of the board, the the town of Vancouver, I believe. Yep. Yeah, the town of Vancouver is connected to Seattle by a single length, which means you can you only have to discard one card, and it was gray, so it could be a card of any color to make that connection. And the way that my hand was set up, I could make it so that that was the last connection I needed for a very important span of track to complete a ticket. But I knew that if that was the last one and it only took one card to take it, it would be almost too obvious for everybody else playing the game to snag up both of the single connections connecting Vancouver and Seattle, effectively making me take a route that would have taken seven different train cars to complete. Three of, or four of which probably had to be a specific... They're all gray, but still it would have had to taken even more train cars. So let's talk more about our own strategy from beginning to end of the game. What was your strategy coming into game? How did you approach it?
I think a great thing to focus on is your tickets, since obviously not completing them is a big penalty.
Yep. So, and the way that scoring works, depending on the number of carts in a track, they're each worth different points when you complete them immediately. So, just to go over that, a single track is worth 1 point. Two tracks is worth 2 points. Three cars is worth four points. Four cars is worth 7 points. Five cars is worth 10 points. And six cards are worth 15 points. Now, compare that to the tickets, which can range from anywhere to 6 points, which is the lowest that I saw, which was a very simple connection, probably on the East Coast, since all the cities are pretty close together with pretty short tracks, and there's lots of ways to get to them. As opposed to what I had one that was Vancouver to New York, I want to say, or maybe it was even Vancouver to Montreal, which was a 20-point track. So the tickets, they average probably around 10 to 11 points. And they're worth more than your average train connection. So it is important to get those tickets.
However, I think it's also important to plan out a route between your cities that not only completes as many of your tickets in a shortest amount of time, but also includes some larger spans of track, since, like you said, you can get 10 to 15 points from a 5 to 6 car track.
So you're saying that your strategy, at least from the beginning of the game when you're picking your tickets, you wanted to pick tickets that had some good large spans in their lengths.
That, but the more important one is just to pick tickets that overlap.
Certainly, yeah. It's very, very convenient. You want to basically maximize each car that you lay down. Because you can't win the game by not completing your tickets.
Right.
Because you don't have enough cars. Just for every train track you lay that doesn't complete a ticket, your opponent is earning just a few extra points per car for each train track they lay that does complete a ticket. So so you want to always be completing tickets, ABCT. And when your tickets overlap, that's just even more points per car that you're laying down.
But an example of the overlapping where it comes into play strategy-wise is, for example, the second game we played, I had Winnipeg to Houston and Duluth to New Orleans. Did I pronounce that right?
Duluth, yeah.
Yeah, Duluth. And the space between New Orleans and Houston is two of any color, but there's only one track for it. So my first turn of the game, I made that connection. That way I could either make a straight line from Winnipeg to New Orleans or Winnipeg to Houston, passing through Duluth, and I was able to complete both tickets that quickly.
Yeah, I agree that it's important to try and figure out which of your tracks are going to be the most contested at the beginning of the game. And those are typically, you know, the wild card tracks that you can use any color to complete, as well as the ones that are in the highly concentrated areas, some in the center of the board between the East Coast and the Midwest.
Right.
You can expect those to be snapped up pretty easily. So when there is a very crucial one for you, for your route, you want to take that soon. I found that when I was looking at routes to begin with, not necessarily while I was choosing my tickets, but when I was choosing my early game plays, I would also take into consideration whether there was an easy diversion of the that I could take for the track. So, you know, there's always a direct connection that's going to be the fastest way, but occasionally there will be, you know, a secondary way to make your connections And if I can, I prioritize those last because I know they're not as important. If somebody else takes them from me, I'll have a backup option. And that's kind of right. like around Montreal, between New York and Boston. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different ways to get around there. New York to Washington.
Chicago to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And that kind of also means that you prioritize tracks that are around the East and East Coast and the Midwest, because there's a ton of different ways to make connections in that area. Right. There's a larger concentration of connections between cities. So it's easier to get from the Northeast to the Southeast, or the Northeast to the, you know, the South center of the country.
Exactly.
The South. I guess that's just the South.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, those are all really short connections. The really long connections you find out on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So if you really want to maximize points per car, then you want to try and go for one of those really long connections.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is something I want to talk about that isn't quite strategy related. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more on the design side again. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, put a pin in that. I want to ask you, when do you go for a new ticket? Because you start with the three. You don't have to keep all three. But, you know, I think I kept two, but mm-hmm. I probably could have kept a third in every game that I played. Because you have a good chunk of time to finish those three.
Right.
But even if you just pick two, when...
I think if I've fulfilled one ticket completely, and I'm close to fulfilling a second one,
mm-hmm.
that's when I can get another one. When I have the surefire completion of two tickets in my, you know, in or close to being two tickets,
mm-hmm.
because that should offset the points lost if you can't complete your new one.
That's true, because you have to pick at least one of your new tickets when you look at the next three and you choose to take the take a new ticket action.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep one, so you want to make sure that you've got your starting tickets in the bag, so that if your three tickets that you look at are a doozy, you know, you've at least already put the resources into your other tickets. You don't have to worry about those anymore. Now you can just focus on completing this one new ticket.
Exactly.
And splitting your attention between tickets can get complicated. Yeah. Okay, so you wanted to talk about the actual design of the game.
Yeah. Okay. So the main thing is, so the game is like 99% the map.
Yeah.
And I think that's, personally as a designer, that's where I think most of the playtesting and changes for balance would have gone into. Because it's a pretty complicated map when you look at it first.
Mm-hmm.
Look down the middle, going from Duluth to Houston. There are two tracks always going down there. Then there's two tracks going down the west side and the east side. And then there's a few two tracks every now and then. I think what it is that, for one thing, major passageways have two tracks. So, like, the Midwest going down the center of the map.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously has two tracks because you need to be able to cross from the left side of the map to the right side.
And you need to be able to cross from the north to the south.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then for the East Coast, from, like, Montreal to Atlanta, I think that would be there because it's a type of thing where... it's just another passageway, but it allows for a quick detour for everywhere beside it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the two tracks being made to avoid detours, it's made to facilitate detours.
And now that you're bringing this up, I also noticed that there is a double track running all the way from New York to San Francisco, which, you know, that's a transcontinental railroad, isn't it?
I don't know, but actually...
Isn't that whereabouts... it should be, you know?
That sounds about right. I'm not too big on train history.
Okay, I only know this from, like, an episode of Muppet Babies.
Yeah, so. Me too. but that sounds about right, yeah, is an interesting flavor win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, you know, years of infrastructure and, you know, very good reasons for people to have the need to get more traffic in certain channels across the country of the United States of America and Canada. So, you know, it only makes sense that in a game about making these routes, the concentration and the importance of getting to where you're going exists. The need exists both here and in real life where this game is based on.
No,
which is pretty cool.
The last place that has a lot of two tracks is the West Coast from Vancouver down to Los Angeles. And this one, I think, is actually based on just math. Now, I said that the East Coast side is based more around facilitating detours. This one is to make it so detours aren't as necessary. So we've already established that the West Coast is less
dense.
So the tracks are much longer. If you look at the map, to go to Vancouver to Seattle, it's one track, like we said earlier. But if those are both filled, it takes 7 cars across that, which we also said. Now, if that from Seattle to Calgary is filled, it takes 13 tracks. So really, I think those two tracks are there on the West Coast to make it so that it's less likely that you'll have to make enormous detours.
Good point.
It still keeps the realism of having a less dense train, you know, through like the West area, but it makes it so that it's a bit more fair for the people who have tickets there.
It balances the West Coast of the map because it's so sparse that detours will kill you. So so they cut you some slack and they put some double tracks down the left side.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, we both played in a group of 4 people. I won the first game, you won the second game. Now you had I believe you had 4 tickets. When you finished the second game. I think I only had 3 when I finished the first game. And I think you got longest track in both games.
I don't think we explained that.
Yeah, we didn't. Well, it's fine. So if at the end of the game, if you have the longest track, meaning you count how many carts are in the longest trail, continuous trail, you can't count the same cart twice, but you can do loops if you have loops in your board, in your tracks. Whoever has the most cars gets 10 bonus points at the end of the game. And then there's a couple ways to resolve tiebreakers, but that's the basic of it. And the game uses a outer tracking, I don't know how to call it,
a meter? Point track?
Point tracker. Yeah, the game has a point tracker going along the edge of the board. Each player has a colored piece that matches the color of their own personal plastic train cars that they use to cover tracks with. And you move the piece as you go along the board. You keep your tickets hidden until the very end of the game, which is, you know, important just so that people don't snipe your tracks from you. Now you said you disliked the use of this external tracker.
Yes, I get why it exists.
Okay.
Because otherwise you would need to supply paper of some sort to track points.
Or provide an extra little like placard that you can use to track points, much like Carcassonne.
Right. And it takes up good space that would otherwise be unused on the board. However, I just don't like the way it looks for some reason.
Yeah, you know, I think there was a problem. I mean, they use these really weird curlicue, at least for the original printing. I don't know if they have changed this in any new editions. And I don't know how it looks in any of the expansions, like the European expansions or whatever. But yeah, they use these really weird curly, like, diamond squares that don't really look good all in a row.
Yeah.
They use a really thin, wispy typeface to put the numbers in. That's very thin, so you can't tell the differences between it. And now sometimes they'll mark every 5 spaces just so it makes it a little quicker and a little more easier to see where you're trying to go. But they differentiate between those numbers with white and yellow text,
which,
you know, they're both pretty bright, so it's kind of hard to tell the difference there. So yeah, I can understand why this game, the point tracker isn't the best, but you know, it's still there, it's still readable enough that it's all right to use. You know, this game, I believe I was reading the instructions correctly when it said that you start on 1, so that's a little weird. Well, in that you don't start on 0.
There is no 0 space. It goes from 1 to 100.
Yeah, it has a 100 space.
Actually, it goes 1 to 80.
1 to 80?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
And then there's a clock in the corner.
What?
Maybe this is a different board, but the one I'm looking at says 1 to 80.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that might be a different... know. Okay, well, maybe this game thinks you go from 80 to... Okay, to 80. Well, I guess.
But I think the one we played on had 1 to 100.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that game didn't anticipate you. Although you finished the game at 110 points or so. Yeah. Well, that's a little weird design flaw. Mm-hmm. I guess they updated it. It must have gone to 80 until they realized that it was poor design. Now the game is airtight, except for that white and yellow typeface thing. But other than that, the game is airtight. It's a pretty solid game, I'd say. And it has a lot of replayability because, you know, in one game, maybe you do really well, you finish all your tickets, you get a lot of points. Mm-hmm. Maybe you win, maybe you don't. You always want to try again, try new routes, try new strategies to building up those routes. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I lost pretty badly the second game, and it, you know, it made me want to come right back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So any closing thoughts?
Not really.
No.
I've talked about most of what I wanted to talk about.
Do you recommend people buy this game?
This game is great to buy.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a area control sort of route building game that is a bit more on the complex side, check out Concordia.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want a game that has some decent plastic molded pieces, a really, really cool board with the map of the United States of America and all of its cities. I'd say it's a good looking, yeah, it's a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to episode 3 of our podcast, where we talked about Ticket to Ride, and episode 3 in our 7-part series on gateway games. We really appreciate it. We hope you liked it. If you want updates from us on when we post episodes, or if you want to just hear our random day-to-day thoughts, you can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Both of them you can find us at BG Broscast. That's at BG Broscast. We also have a website, and we post our podcast episodes there. That website is bgbcast.com. That's bgbcast.com. So you can check that out. Every Saturday we post new episodes, and you can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Stitcher. Hopefully anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us there and subscribe and get notified when we release new episodes there. We also, of course, sell our own board games. Right now we only have one game out. It's our one-page role-playing game called Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. You can find that on entertainthegeeky.com. That's the website for our the podcast that our friends do. Our friends Chris and Roger, who we started this business with, run that website, and they sell that game. And we're using all the profits we get from that game to fund the publishing of our next game, which is going to be a real, real fun game, and really interesting, and totally different from our just a one-page role-playing game. We're really excited to show it to you guys, so please go check out Merle's Truck Stop in Maine, maybe buy a copy, and hopefully soon we'll have some more news regarding our next game coming out soon. That's it for us. Again, we really appreciate you listening to the episode. We want to hear your comments, too. We recorded our first 7 episodes, and those are coming out every Saturday. But once those 7 are up, we will definitely want to take your comments into consideration. Let us know if, you know, maybe we spend too long on the rules. Maybe we don't spend enough time on the rules. Maybe you'd like to hear more about certain aspects of the design. You know, we want to hear your thoughts so that we can make our podcast a really great board game hobby design podcast. Again, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week, hopefully, when we release our episode where we talk about Carcassonne.